Hello, hello, OdaFest podcast listeners. My name is Angelo, and with me today are Nancy and Jay.
It's us. Surprise.
That's us.
Yes. Now, today we have our winter anime review episode. Oh my lord. Oh my god.
And we spent more time on two of the five series that we're reviewing watching because those first episodes were hella long.
They were a doozy. And
they're making movies nowadays.
And then and then two of the shows had like a few minutes.
One of them was less than a minute long.
This is probably the greatest discrepancy in first episode run lengths that we've ever had.
Ever.
And during like, a single episode review.
The average ended up being like reasonable, but if you look at how much time was skewed towards two episodes versus the other three, it's hilarious.
It really
is. Two episodes over 40 minutes, two episodes under 4 minutes, and one episode in the regular range of around 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So without further ado, Yusha Kei Nishoshu, Chubutsu Yusha, 9004, Taikemu Hiroku, or Sentence to Be a Hero. This anime was clocking in at 1 hour for the first episode.
Yep.
And Jesus Christ, did it ever deserve it?
There was a lot to
digest.
It wasn't that it was overly complicated or complex, or it didn't feel that way to me. But I understand why they went for the 58 minute
episode.
It was
very close to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It gave you a lot of exposition on... Well, it didn't give you a lot of exposition, actually. The exposition was quite close to the end, the last third.
It just started with Danger Twink Dota running through the forest with a goddamn box, a goddamn coffin. Even.
My favorite part of that episode, sorry, movie, episode, whatever we want to call it, my favorite thing about this is that he's a klepto. He was asked at one point, why did you steal that? And he says, it just looked really stealable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's one of my favorite characters. He's wonderful. And so the entire premise of this anime is that our main characters in the hero unit, all of them are the worst criminals the kingdom has. All of them are sentenced to the front lines to fight against the fairies. And for whatever reason, they have magic that means they can't die.
Yeah, but also the fairies look like angels that came out of Evangelion.
They look like the Flood from Halo mixed with paintball.
Huh. That's... Yeah, like, okay, I could see it.
They're crazy. The enemy design in this is something I've never seen before. At first, it took a little bit of getting used to, but now that I've Dio and I've been watching this every week, I love it. It's so cool. The fact that all of the demon lords are, instead of like other fantasy where they're just a human with horns or something, sometimes big, sometimes small, whatever. You believe that they are a threat to humanity. Like, they're a giant, fortress-sized, monstrous thing.
Well, they're they're very Beelzebub.
The one that we saw in this episode was very Beelzebub.
Yeah. Not to mention just, like, there's the monstrosity and the size of it, and then there's also the out there designs that they created these creatures with, and it was interesting. There's definitely
I think it's interesting to me as well, like the sort of I don't know if this extends to all of the sort of beasts that they have, but like They all remind me a little bit of, like, with the neon bits, the cordyceps. It sort of reminds me of cordyceps.
Yeah,
but like neon cordyceps.
Neon cordyceps.
And cordyceps.
Very.
For people who don't know, for some reason, is that fungus that infects your brain and takes over ants a lot of the time and other bugs.
Basically turns you into a zombie.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the implication with it. That the demon blight, while definitely magical in nature, is spread like an infection. Like, it's super gnarly in that way. The other thing,
I mean, that is the part with the goddess, right?
Yeah. As far as I can tell, the studio behind this, Studio Kai, this is their first project. This is their first work, to my understanding. Hmm. And it feels like a flex. It absolutely feels like this was a flex, being like, look at what we can do. Now hire us to make your anime. You know what I mean?
Maybe. And like, very often a studio's first big work is going to want to come out of the gate strong.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember when I first saw MAPPA. Their first anime that I saw, I don't know if it was their first anime, was Shingeki no Bahamut, or Rage of Bahamut, which was just, it was a Cygames property. It was just a gacha game that I don't even think ever made it to the West. And it went insane. It was incredibly good. And look at MAPPA now. They are simultaneously saving anime and grinding animators into dust. So you win some, you lose some.
Mm. Now, I need me some of that good animator dust.
Oh, yeah. Inject it right into my brain. this
was
anime...
Was it just me? Uh-huh.
Definitely. I don't know if it suffers or revels in it. It has a real case of Abenomics. Do you two understand what I mean by that?
I think for the sake of our listeners, you should explain it anyway.
Will do. So Abenomics is the tendency in anime right now to really, really, really push family values. Like, everybody likes having family, for the most part. But anime right now is so dead set on trying to turn weebs into parents. This has started quite a while ago, but Spy Family is the absolute peak of Abenomics. It's like, oh my god, look how fun it is to be a parent and have a family and a child. You want one of those.
I see.
Buddy Daddies, I feel like, did it much better. Do you guys remember that? We reviewed that for the podcast.
Yeah, we reviewed the first episode of that,
Daddies.
Yeah.
Buddy Daddies was, like, actually about the parents, whereas Spy Family is actually about Anya. Mm-hmm. This anime is all about trying to make our main boy, Xylo, make him want to be a dad for the goddess character.
Hmm. Who somehow really, really reminds me of Konosuba energy.
Really? To me, she is literally just a tiny little overachiever who really, really wants headpats and praise.
Yep. And she literally tells you, right? Like, she straight up asks.
Every episode. Yeah. You will not
she's
get
like,
away
you
from that.
You may. Yeah, she's always like, you may now worship me. I await your praise for the work I have done, for what I have achieved. Oh. It's sort of an interesting dynamic. It reminds me of a couple other shows. I can't remember. There's this one show that I watched and I really liked, but this is like 10 years ago. I cannot remember its title at all, but it also featured a white-haired girl and quote unquote her knight, and I only remember the character design and the art style, and I do remember the story, but I cannot remember the title at all. But their dynamic is very similar.
White-haired girl, and she was calling the main character her knight.
Not really her knight so much as like he served her in a similar way. He has like a design where he's mostly shirtless, I think, a lot of the time. He's a swordsman, and he has his thing that stands out is that his hair is distinctly like a maple leaf, like a Japanese maple leaf.
Oh,
are you talking about Katanagatari?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh no, Katanagatari
was a fantastic anime.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a great show.
It had such a unique style.
I'm just saying, like the white haired girl in Katanagatari, she doesn't require praise, but they share a similar character dynamic in their pairing, I believe. So that's what it reminded me of a lot.
Oh, I can get you there. Both, I can
like
get
the moment
you.
I mentioned, I like how I mentioned like the signature hair for the male character.
Yeah, the signature hair is what got me there.
Triggered.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was the thing that got me
the hair
right to where you needed us to be.
Yep. That brought us exactly where you needed it. Oh my God.
Good job, Jay.
But
I do also like the goddess. I like the goddess's power. At least what's been shown of her ability.
Her power is literally
very much unlimited Blade Works.
Yeah, sure. Very Gilgamesh. But like,
not
okay.
Only that, it really all works right with our boy Xylo, because uh-huh. he's got these magic crests in the context of this show are just like little engravings on your equipment that basically have a spell built into them. So he has some in his boots that make him jump real good.
Mm-hmm.
And he has some in his gloves that can turn, I don't know if it's just anything he touches or any knives or swords he touches, into high explosive.
Yeah, so he's basically Gambit.
Exactly. And so she's just generating more swords for him to turn into goddamn bombs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They work really well together.
Yeah, I was actually a little bit scared before she got properly into battle that she would end up having a useless power and she would end up being like the useless Megami trope. And I'm glad she wasn't.
Wow, that is, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's so interesting that you thought that.
Oh no! Oh no!
I will say, like, the thing that really kind of got me more interested in the show is not really the whole combat sequences, as cool and visually satisfying as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do like the whole idea that we kind of touched on, where the influence of essentially like a I guess the Demon King is corruptive. And you can see it as like a physical corruption, because there's a couple of very short scenes that allude to the fact that like the corruption of, or rather, it can corrupt anything.
Yeah,
including, you know, I think what seems to be a very important pivotal previous character, and that I guess the betrayal of the government to Xylo and his how he operates as a soldier is something that was, I guess, in itself a corruption of the system.
Oh yeah. The government is not the good guys in this, which I feel is something that all
weird
of us can really really empathize with right now.
Oof.
It's it really touches on a few cultural moments if you feel what I'm putting down.
Oh dear.
It is honestly,
courts are infallible.
This is actually my favorite anime of the season, which is an insane thing to say when Fate Strange Fake is airing.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like, both of those are vying for the top 10 spaces in my mind. I like this one better.
Good to know. This show reminds me of a lot of other shows, but they take aspects from each of the shows I feel like they, not necessarily reference from, but they do it in a way that doesn't necessarily feel like stealing, and I do feel like it does it in a way where it's very refreshing and well put together. I don't know. Like, I can definitely see why you're into it. I didn't think I would be into it, but there's enough intrigue there that I would want to keep going.
I recommend you keep going because the characters only get better and better and better. Oh my God.
Or deader.
Like,
or deader and deader and deader.
Danger Twinkadota. Even though I called him that, and in the first episode, he doesn't really get that much characterization other than being silly klepto. He's fucking crazy. He's cool. He's great.
Oh, okay.
The whole thing about the hero unit, all of them have a screw loose. Every single one of them. And it's not until you get further into it that you start realizing the traumas and pains that our boy Xylo are going through. It's fun. It's really fun.
I think it's pretty clear from this first episode that Xylo has baggage. Pretty clear. He outright states it's pretty clear he has the baggage. He's also trying to keep the Klepto Boy from being driven possibly more insane by the resurrections. And like that already says a lot, too, about the world and the way it works.
It's just a great anime. Unlike our next that's rude of me. That's rude of me, but I'm sorry. It is impossible to follow up Sentence to Be a Hero. And this one
especially
did not have a fucking chance.
I was a bit disappointed. Champignon Nomajo. Champignon Witch, or Witch of the Mushrooms, if you want to take the dual translation forward from French to Romanization to English. So this one was disappointing. Like, I wanted to like it. The premise was good, but I think it was really clear this was written for very young children. It was evidenced by the fact that the narrator has to tell you everything that's happening. So, not my style of storytelling, but even so, the actual story itself doesn't seem like it tells the right message either.
It was I loved the way that it looked, even though the character designs were more often than not a little bit off-putting. The backgrounds were gorgeous.
The music was good too.
The music was fantastic. Like, it's harder to describe how much I'm into the aesthetic, with the exception of the little cute things, the supposedly cute things. I hate them. I hate them. Ooh,
I hated all of them.
The little cow
they were
thing,
very
the little
off-putting.
Sheep thing, the little bat thing. I hate them all.
I like Ninji.
Okay, the sheep I immediately recognized as Lamb Chop from Lamb Chop and Friends, the Sherry Lewis, the ventriloquist, the puppeteer.
Oh, yeah,
the that
song
show
that never ends.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on, my friend.
Yeah, just like her. The little red boots and the little leggings and everything.
And that's okay. They're allowed to do an homage like that. But
yeah, if it was a deliberate homage, I don't know if it is.
I feel like the entire premise of this first episode, who knows, maybe it changes later on, is that, oh no, look at this witch girl. Isn't she, everybody treats her mean because she's the poison witch and she sprouts poison mushrooms everywhere she goes. And then they are even like, oh, but no, she is actually filtering the poisonous miasma out of the air and concentrating it into the mushrooms. And but then they still show that people who pass by her get sick or get their soul stealing or fucking start rotting at the touch of her, like those guys deserved it.
Yeah.
But the people are correct to be afraid of her.
Yes, at first we were sort of like, oh, they're just judging
they're just
her
ignorant
for being like an outsider. Like, it's very like,
it's prejudice.
What is it? Xenophobic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you realize that they actually kind of have a reason.
A point.
Because, like, yes, some of it's probably overblown in the idea that, like, you know, you don't have to be a jerk to her necessarily,
yeah,
but maybe you could stay away from
nice
her, or
her,
like, you could,
you
yeah,
still
you could
have to
nice
stay the fuck away. You have to maintain
yeah,
minimum distance.
She's kind of, she's kind of like Rogue
dignity here
from X-Men. You know, like she
I
has that Rogue from X-Men sort
Rogue
of vibe. Like, she's very withdrawn. Yeah, but she's withdrawn because she can't establish these personal relationships because she has to set boundaries due to her power, except she doesn't, she's not the one setting boundaries. She longs for a pretty little boy of her own.
So much that she drew a 2D version of him and accidentally stole his soul.
Yeah.
And implanted it into the paper and basically wrote fan fiction of yeah. her and him having a little tryst. Romance. Tryst. Not even full on romance, I guess.
Small tryst.
One dance. One dance,
yeah, one
in,
dance
Russian light.
In the air, under the moon.
Yeah. It has a lot of, look, there are a lot of things that I think go in the positive direction for the show, but it is like the opposite of a sentence to be a hero in the sense that none of it's put well together. Like the sentence I just said.
Like the only things that are good about it are the parts that you don't pay attention to. Like the backgrounds are gorgeous. Every single frame looks like it comes out of a storybook. The music
and yes,
sets the vibe.
The character animation is a bit lacking.
The character animation, I hate to say this, it feels like low budget seasonal slop. The kind of anime that is sent out to die that no one will remember after it's done airing.
Yeah.
But like
the initial vibe,
I don't like
the initial vibe.
That. It's
I think mean. Nancy, was it you that said that it has sort of a Ghibli vibe? It has
in the beginning.
Ghibli.
Yeah. In the beginning,
it is
it had
Ghibli.
A somewhat Ghibli-esque surrealism in the way
yes.
that things transformed, because they show her making medicines and they have she has like little steam
helpers.
Spirits like, yeah little
yes,
like
yes.
spirits that help
Familiars.
Her do the thing, and the medicine
yes.
transforms from like a liquid into little pearls, and then they put them into cute little bottles, you know, that
she's
stuff.
Making meth in her little meth lab.
Let's call
fantasy okay. meth lab.
That aside. But like the little bit of surrealism in the beginning did have an almost
it was fun.
Ponyo. It had like an almost Ponyo-esque sort of surrealism to it. But
then
it doesn't carry.
Within like a
yeah.
minute of that, they introduce this horrible little cow creature with the worst eyes I've ever seen. They have darkness in their heart. I tell you what, they gaze into you and the abyss gazes. It's just awful.
They have like, they.
And then it
reminds
transforms
me
into
of,
this giant cow, like a normal cow.
An ox.
And you know what's even
but
worse?
With awful horns.
Everything they say, it's like
is
everything
yes.
they say is like a double-edged, a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, everything.
Like that
it's
animal,
always...
That little familiar beast is basically her own
self-doubt.
Yes, self-doubt. Thank you. That's exactly it. Like basically voices every reason why she can't
do things.
Essentially move out of her own shell.
Yeah. Why you can't be happy? Like these people aren't going to be nice to you. They're going to avoid you. They won't sell you these things. You blah da 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 da.
Well, look
and
at all those
like,
people happy with the medicine. I'm mm-hmm. sure they would not buy it anymore if they knew you made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly
like,
what he says.
If I had a cow that spoke like that to me, I'd be having a steak dinner.
Oh.
Like, I don't know why she keeps him around. Just saying.
But,
God damn.
You know, like, we shit on these little characters, and yes, they're awful, but going back to the whole, like, she's being ostracized from society bit, it's all that is also true to the extent where there are people that interact more or less normally with her in the
Except-
way that they should be interacting with her, in the sense that, like, they kind of want to protect themselves from, you know, maybe her effects.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't advocate for her.
No,
all.
They don't. And they
no,
don't
they
advocate
don't.
for treating her with dignity either. Like they
yeah.
themselves do. But like even the shopkeep. So there's an apothecary in town who sells her medicines. She makes medicines, brings them to town, sells them to him, and then he in turn sells them to the townsfolk. And even she sees someone in town who is missing a leg and struggling. and in pain. And so she, next time she comes to town, she brings a potion that can help regrow lost limbs. And he says, oh, I can't sell that. You have to stick to your usual stuff. Like, that's too unusual. I can't sell that. You shouldn't do things like that. And it's
but
just like...
he's just... You know what's funny? That's just like the big pharma conspiracy about how they won't cure cancer, because if you cure cancer, there won't be any patients to make money off of.
Ugh. God.
That's the vibe I got from him. Just to kick her a little bit more, he also says, next time, can you bring me more of that hair regrowth serum? Because that was really popular. It's like,
yeah. Because
this is
limb regrowth
propaganda.
Serum. Because a limb regrowth serum would not be popular at all.
Oh yeah, not at all.
God,
the messaging. It's the moral messaging that's really inconsistent in this show that bothers me. That's all.
I feel like
it's true.
I don't want to say this because I feel like it's the most rude thing that you can say to the people who worked on this. I feel like it was written by ChatGPT.
Oh, and I mean, I don't know that it's not true, but ow.
It's just every time it feels like it has something going for it, it contradicts itself. And then there's the other thing that really bothered me. I forgot about this until I rewatched it the second time with you guys right now. And as the show went on, more and more things had faces.
Yes.
Disturbing way. So like, she starts off the show, she's got this cute little mushroom cap hat. Very charming. Mm-hmm. As she's trying to hide from the people in town, she turns it into a witch hat with some vines on it. And every time she's happy, a flower blooms on it. And that's adorable. I love that. That's great. And then she buys a book from the bookseller. And a face is suddenly on her hat and she's shoving the book in its mouth. And I'm like, excuse me.
Yeah, that got a little
weird.
Maybe
that's how she reads.
And then... suddenly, all of the mushrooms that are sprouting up around her, instead of just being weird-ass mushrooms, they have faces on them, too. And
yeah.
She just eats one. She turns this cursed book into a tiny little mushroom with a struggling face, and then just munches on. It's like, yeah, that tastes like 150 people died to this curse.
Yeah.
Yummy!
Yeah, she has true. The power to absorb poisons and curses and stuff. So she like pulls a curse out of a cursed book, and then it turns into a mushroom, and then she just puts it in her mouth like without even a second glance.
I think if there's anything I can say about this show, about why it is not as good as it actually could be, is because the vibes are wildly inaccurate and wildly,
wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, just awful, awful vibes all over the place. It should either reside in one of two worlds. It should either be sort of like a immaculate vibes, and yes, she has like her issues, but they're going to work through it. Or it should be like a little bit of a darker fantasy, but it's kind of neither. It goes back and forth in like, you know, you have this little naive girl who wants to help, but everyone around her sucks actual garbage ass.
Yeah.
In this little fantasy world.
So the only saving grace I could think of for this type of storytelling is that it falls very well in line with like problematic fairy tales. Like, you know, you think about how old mythology, even biblical stories,
like Grimm's tales,
Grimm's fairy
tales, like
it's problematic. There was a moral message in there, but it got kind of muddied by all the other things that are also wrong with that story, like that kind of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't do it well enough. It doesn't do it well enough to be redeeming. So it's a hard pass.
You know what had really good vibes? Gelpio.
Oh,
Gelpio.
Gelpio had really good vibes, even though they were like 2-minute long episodes.
Gelpio.
Can we get a reminder of what Gelpio was?
Gelpio, to my understanding, is literally a commercial for a chemical company.
That's correctly. What it was.
It's a mascot. It's a mascot for Taika Company. And Taika Company makes certain products. I think one of them is like they make sports, what do you call it, materials as well. They make gel type products and foam type products. That's my understanding.
Yeah, this, and this is a mascot for one of their gel types that are just like, I don't know, really soft and more or less indestructible.
And jiggly. Oh,
and
my God.
Very jiggly. So this they made an adorable chick
had
mascot.
The most striking and enjoyable art style. Like, Champignon de Majo had a simple style in the way that it lacked substance. Mm-hmm. This one has a simple style in the way that exudes whimsy and elegance.
It's
it is
very expressive.
Whimsical.
It's hot pink lines, lots of dithering and what is the word I'm looking for? Posterization, and it's so fun. And the characters, there's these two characters that are around Gelpio, and they're like rapping and stuff. And one is just like, "E idea dessiné," and I'm just like, yeah, that is an e-idea dessiné.
It's a very, oh God, it's a very, it's incredibly immaculate in its vibe delivery.
Yeah.
It's very pop deco sort of meets cell shading art style. Like, I don't know how to describe it much better than that. I'm sure there's a probably specific term for that art style that I'm just not aware of.
It's like Sanrio with extra
sugar. Watching it.
Yeah.
I would recommend, yeah. Well, except it's
not
like... No,
it's by Sugarless Cum Factory. So there is no sugar.
Yeah, you...
Yeah, it's sugar-free.
It's like Sanrio with artificial
sweetener. It's stevia. Yes, but it's also like not... Sanrio, I would describe as like innocent in a way.
Yeah, no, this right? one like is like... This one is just showing off world.
Yeah, but it's not like innocent in the sense that like there's gangster characters.
And evil CEO characters that we saw, and like grizzled truckers. It's kind of fun, and it is so fun
more.
That we actually didn't realize there were no subtitles. There is no subtitled release
quickly.
For this. You, Nancy noticed immediately, but I was just out here being like, "Oh, e-idea dessiné."
It doesn't punish you for being illiterate. Okay,
exactly.
Yes. You can enjoy
unlike
this while
a different
illiterate.
Show that we also tried to watch.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of substance to Gelpio, and you shouldn't expect that. You don't expect any substance. But if you
the
just need
are 2 minutes
absolute.
Long. Serotonin.
Absolute pure
low cortisol.
Like serotonin and brain bleach. Like it's wonderful brain bleach.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice after watching the news.
Real. Real. The news these days kind of be feeling like Shibuyugi Dameshiwoku.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as playing death games to put food on the table.
Yup.
This anime, the first episode, was 47 minutes long. And I remember when we were doing our preview episode, I'd already watched it by then. What did you guys think?
So, my very, very, very first impression when the episode kicks off was that this is going to be a slow-paced show because they let shots linger for a really long time, almost uncomfortably long. Like
they build tension,
and because of the nature of the show, like it's in the title, it's about death games. Because of that, and the way they let shots linger, my immediate reaction is that something bad is going to happen. The longer this shot sticks around. So it builds this really awful anxiety where you're expecting bad things to happen. And when everyone in this episode, movie, actually, is a cute girl dressed in a maid costume, you're like, oh, this is going to be cute. Bad things happen to cute girls. And then the first, I think, whole third of the episode, nothing really bad happens yet. So you're just like, okay, maybe it's cute girls do cute things and they happen to be playing death games. And then no, immediately after
the,
that, they start. Things start happening.
Going bad.
And I don't know how they achieved this exactly. I didn't rewatch this. But the fact that they fully remove blood and gore from the death games makes it worse.
It does. And so This is by Studio Dean. If you've been following anime for a while, that name should make you throw up in your mouth a little bit. They are where good anime goes to die, or where good stories go to basically get the worst adaptation possible. It is insane Ouch. That something this gorgeous is coming out of Studio Dean. And it feels like it has things to say. Like, when we're told about how, I don't really want to spoil it, but something very horrible happens to a girl. And yep. she's basically reduced to a bunch of cotton fluff.
Yeah.
And it feels gory. They made cotton balls feel gory.
Yeah. And, like, again, that initial feeling of cute maids being sad and scared because they're in a death game, and they mostly resolve to try and get through it because they all want to survive, obviously. And that just so quickly and very suddenly starts giving way to, like, psychological trauma.
It does. Going back to the cotton balls thing, they call it the preserving treatment. They don't explain the mechanics of it. But all that we can tell is that this is something that lets people lose limbs and have them reattached after the game. Like, they can walk away from the games effectively injury-free.
Yeah, it's only mental trauma.
But they also have something to say in the meta sense that it's like, oh, the viewers didn't like the gore, so they did this to, like, lessen the blow. You don't get too much world building in this anime.
Not yet.
One of the few things they say is that this is the story of a deranged world. So it's like,
sure, yeah.
We get the feeling that in the overall world, things like hyper-violence and stuff are so common that cotton balls become threatening.
And also, this is, like, they're playing a death game that's being televised. Like, this is something people are betting on. This is the new standard of racehorse betting, but now we're betting who survives through a death game.
This is not that far off from a lot of shows that have come out in the last, like, 7 or 8 years, though. I mean, like, you have things like Squid Games, for example. You have, you know, from even before that, you kind of have Hunger Games.
Yes.
You have one show that I mentioned previously when we first did our recommendations prior to this season was that it reminded me of Alice in Borderlands, about, like, sort of game show. Except Alice in Borderlands, first of all, is a far inferior show to this in that I hate the character development in Alice in Borderlands. But there is, like, this aspect of, like, superhuman technology combined with making people play with, you know, putting their lives on the line, essentially for, they say entertainment in this world, but overall it feels like it's indeterminate as to who benefits from this other than the entertainment aspect. Like, having to put people, like, this girl, this main character girl, her career path right now is being death game winner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's her whole thing.
Like, that is her
career
path. That
being said, she's not the only person.
No,
that's not, that's
have,
not the only
so as far
person
as we
who's
can
there,
tell,
and they have different motivations. Yes.
As the show goes on, there are a couple of other people who have screws loose like her who have decided, yes, this is actually my career path. But a lot of other people are like, I've only done this once or twice, or this is my first time doing it.
Yeah, and there are people who are desperate for money.
Yeah, some people were like, I didn't expect to be in a death game. In the sense that I feel like they were, it's unwritten for exposition, but it's like they were forced to be in one for some reason other than for money. Like, they might not actually have expected to be in one, but someone coerced them into it, not even expecting that they would win.
How much?
And essentially get money at the end.
How much do you think you would need to be paid to do this sort of thing?
Like, you'd have
not
to be
not enough to have it wouldn't have to be a career. That's like that's the monetary amount. Like, you win once and you retire. That's like the
So you're thinking in the
Squid Game
personally.
Approach. But it's the Squid Game approach. It has to be, because if you put your life on the line, why would you do it multiple times? Like, why do you need to be a multiple time winner?
Yeah.
In order to continue to be able to live in the real world.
I can't remember the exact value.
Yeah, I think she said this was her 38th or something.
So for our girl Yuki, the first episode was her 28th game. And her goal is to do 99 or 100.
Holy crap.
Because that is the record.
At the very end.
That is the record. In one of the later episodes, they briefly mention, like as a very offhanded thing, the value that you get for winning these games is in the tens of thousands. Only the tens of thousands.
Is it the tens of thousands of yen?
No. Dollars. Awful. Dollars amount. I have the mental comparison in my head. It is.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Not enough where I would ever consider this. Like, I was looking at that and I was like, that's actually...
No.
You would have to play a few of these a year to make a middle-class income. Like, this actually doesn't pay good enough.
No, it doesn't. And, like, a bunch of the girls in this first movie episode basically say, oh, I'm trying to pay some debts, or I'm trying to get money for my family, or something like
or
that.
Or I was
like,
tricked into it, one of them said.
Or I was tricked. Like, okay. Not, like, this has to be a world where employment is extraordinarily difficult to come by.
And one criticism that I have over the course of the show, this isn't getting into the first episode part of it. We don't get enough world building. We get mostly character development, and really interesting stories and lots of psychological trauma. Lots of it.
So much.
But I kind of want to know, how fucked up is the world to make this normal?
Well, the weird thing is, to me, is that, again, only focusing on first episode storytelling, you can tell that there's some facsimile of a normal world. Like, there are people with normal careers here. She exits the game. Not surprisingly, main girl, wins the game. She exits. She's taken to a hospital by paramedics.
It's not like it's some post-apocalypse.
There's police involved. Yeah, like it's not like it's complete chaos and disorder in the outside world. So why, again, is this the career path?
Like, it's a functioning dystopia.
Because, you know, if we talk about the quote-unquote, like, the tens of thousands of dollars in winning. Now, don't get me wrong, tens of thousands of dollars is not an insignificant amount of money to anybody that I know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that's not usually the kind of debt people are talking about. When they say they're in debt, it's not, unfortunately, like $20,000 is probably low debt.
$20,000 is something that you can bounce back from, not exactly easily, but it's something you can bounce back from.
It's not irrecoverable.
Yeah. Like,
right?
If you are in debt and you are putting your life on the line, either you owe it to the mafia. Or something else is going on, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's really
big. And it's disappointing to hear that you're saying that there's not much world building past first episode anyways, because that's the only part I actually really want to know. I hate to say it, there's enough media where the death games are being played.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I in terms of the games, I kind of don't care that much about the games. There's we can all come up, if we all sat down and wrote down a bunch of games that characters could play that would risk their lives, that's not the hard part. That's the easy hypothetical part. The hard hypothetical part is creating the world in which this is necessary.
Exactly. And I think I think it's just a meta commentary about anime viewers in general. That's honestly my current acting theory, is that they're not commenting on the world because the world is you, the viewer. How dare you watch this slop? How dare you watch these cute girls doing tragic things?
I will say, on a slightly different note, I wasn't sure if the animation was left unfinished looking on purpose in certain shots.
Okay. That is absolutely a thing. It is simultaneously for cinematic purposes because it's cinematic as hell.
Well,
it's also because Dean definitely didn't give them budget.
It was definitely a little disorienting when there were shots where they didn't even bother putting faces on people.
Yeah. Mm. No, I understand what you mean.
And then there were a number of shots where it really, and I don't say this lightly, really reminded me of my teenage years getting used to Photoshop and accidentally hiding all my line art.
Yep. That is a stylistic choice that they have explicitly gone through with. You see it in every episode going forward.
Really?
And my hypothesis, it is simultaneously a cost-cutting measure, but something also to just change the vibes. You know what I mean? Because it is something that changes the mood, builds tension. The director behind this is an actual genius. You can't convince me otherwise.
If you say so, all I can say is, in my opinion, not even a tomato detective could convince me to find a reason, to determine a reason to continue watching, because I don't think it's good enough. Not for me.
Fair. No, Dio and I have been enjoying it a lot. But Uso Tante, Tumantu, was also a problem because there was once again no subs.
But also no voices.
There was no voices.
No voices, no subs.
There was literally just, it was 1 minute per episode of voice bubbles and dramatic turnarounds with a tomato detective doing a little pointy finger. And I'm sure that this would be absolutely exhilarating. We probably missed out on one of the best stories, a true modern day Shakespeare. All because we can't read.
We illiterate.
We
sorry,
illiterate.
We can't read Japanese very well or very quickly. I should say,
I can read it very
slowly.
So I am, I personally put it in my mind that Uso Tante Tomanto is actually the second coming of Mob Psycho 100, the best story known to mankind. It is probably the best I'll ever know.
If Mob Psycho 100 had a child with the busy world of Richard Scarry.
Well, the difference is Richard Scarry
had voice acting. That. It's true.
It's true.
And we watched the trailer, or not the trailer, the opening.
I hadn't seen that opening in like 30 years.
And for anyone who doesn't remember it, what we're talking about in terms of the busy world of Richard Scarry, that's the old cartoons / children's books where there's that little worm with a little green hat and he's in his little red apple car. Yeah, and then there's like the little tabby cats. Or no, they're not tabbies. They're like tortoiseshell cat with like a detective hat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a whole lot of stuff going on.
There's a lot of characters in that thing, but it has the same sort of vibes. This Uso Tante Tomanto character.
I'm sure if I was five, I would love this.
Would you be able to read that much kanji when you're five, maybe?
Maybe if I was a Japanese five-year-old, I don't know.
Well, it's very,
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure a Japanese five-year-old is far more literate in Japanese than 35-year-old me now.
Yeah. I would think so. Not going to lie. I'm pretty
sure
they would be.
I agree.
They probably have a great time. It seems fun.
Uh-huh. It does. It does seem very fun, very silly. I will say that there was a character who like suddenly enters the room and looks like they have dire news to deliver to Tomanto. And I was like, that's a meat bun. What's a meat bun doing here? And then immediately someone else points out, no, Nancy, that's an onion. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
no.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is definitely an onion. And the most disturbing character, however, is Banana Head Man, also known as, I call him Chinnigan. because he has long chin.
He was such a strange banana character. They could have done him so many
banana
ways.
Banana peel pompadour. It was great.
And they did this weird thing. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's a way to tell. Like, have you heard of that thing where it's like, this is how a monkey peels a banana? And it's because they peel it from the non-stem end.
Yes.
And apparently that sort of reduces the strings and the banana once it's unpeeled. Well, they did this thing. It was a very short little scene where the banana was already peeled. So it was not talking about how to peel a banana. But they, like, had the soft banana fruit exposed, and then someone like pushed their finger into the top of the banana and it split evenly into three pieces. And I was like, I don't think that's a thing, but it was also really disturbing to me.
A little bit.
In a show like this.
There was definitely like a spot in this episode, in one of the two episodes that we sped through, where like somebody opens a book and it's like, are tomatoes fruit? And then he does his Sherlock pose, and I'm like, oh, this is supposed to be semi-educational. Okay.
Oh.
I was edumacated. Certainly.
I don't think I was educated at all. Maybe I'll just go back and study and report back on next week's episode of the OdaFest podcast.
Me too. Got some reading to do. See you then.
Bye-bye. I'm learning. Goodbye.